uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, on radio stations from California to North Carolina, and Vermont, of course. Today, Brunch with Bernie, the first hour of our regular Friday program. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent member of Congress in the history, in the 230-some-odd-year history of that body. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. I think of him as America's congressman. His website, bernie.house.gov, if you want information directly from and about Congressman Sanders. And our telephone number, if you want to call in, be on the program, 1-866-889-8894. Of course, if you want to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com, click on live chat. That'll take you to the message board. Click on live chat again, and it'll drop you in the chat room. Bernie, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Oh, it's great to have you here.
How's the West Coast treating you?
The West Coast is treating me well. We've moved into our house, and slowly our stuff arrives on Monday, and I'm starting a local radio show here on Monday as well, and so I'm busy.
Well, we're going to miss you in Vermont, but the best of luck to you.
Well, I miss Vermont already, although I will be back. You know, we have a lot of friends there, and you know, we'll get back from time to time. So. You don't ever leave Vermont behind. You know, it's always inside you. So you're in the news a lot.
Let me tell
this
you,
week.
This was quite a week, and I think we'll have to extend the program for 5 hours here because a lot has happened this week. But let me begin by telling you a very interesting experience that happened to me personally, and that I became a victim this week of the Republican attack machine. And let me tell you how it happens. And how yours truly ended up on the Drudge Report, on Rush Limbaugh, in the National Review, in the Washington Times, on the O'Reilly Factor. That's all that I know. There may have been even more, all within a question of a few hours.
Oh, and I'm getting emails from people going, what's the deal, you know, and what
is
happening?
I'll tell you what the deal is. But there are two parts there. I'll tell you what happened. But the really interesting question is how this thing moves this fast and why it moves and what we call the Republican attack machine echo chamber, and how that works.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. The deal is that in Tom DeLay, we have the most reactionary House leader, probably, certainly in the modern history of this Congress. This is a guy who works day and night for the wealthy and the powerful. This is a guy who just this week, and we'll talk about this in a moment, pushed through the repeal of the estate tax, which will give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the very wealthiest people in this country. Only the top 2% of people will benefit from that. This is a guy who's pushing hard to cut back on programs for working people and the middle class. This is a guy who is pushing an extreme cultural agenda, a guy who in every sense is a leader of the extreme right wing in this country. Now, a couple of weeks ago, there was a story in, I think it was the Washington Post, talking about how DeLay, through his campaign, had provided, I believe the figure was $500,000 to his wife over a period of years for work on her campaign.
Right.
Of all the issues out there, to me, that is not a major issue. DeLay raises zillions of dollars for his causes. What his wife does or does not do, I don't know. All of this stuff is nothing new. Dick Cheney's wife worked in her campaign. Turns out that my wife in the state of Vermont is a very well-known political consultant, does a lot of media in the state. She has worked for the Democratic candidate for governor, Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor, Democratic candidate for auditor of accounts, the Progressive Party candidate for lieutenant governor, and she has worked for me. She's the best in the state in doing certain types of work, and I have paid her for my campaign over the last two campaigns a modest amount of money. I have a stepdaughter who in 5 years also worked for me doing a variety of tasks. Very bright young lady, does a great job. She made $65,000 over 5 years. That's what she made.
So that's like 11, that's below the poverty wage, Bernie.
Right, well, she didn't work full-time, but she got paid very modestly.
But, you're paying
I know,
that's below
right.
The poverty wage, Bernie.
Yes, they're very angry at me for not paying enough. Dozens of men.
I don't think Tom DeLay pays his wife below the poverty wage, Bernie.
Anyhow, The issue here is that in campaigns, I don't see a problem with having people who are close to you if they're paid wages that are reasonable. Obviously, there is something wrong, and any campaign contributor would be upset if, you know, huge sums of money went to a family member. But I don't think we did anything improper. It's no great secret here in the state of Vermont.
And this was all publicly disclosed?
Of course. I mean, yeah. Of course it is, by definition.
Yeah.
And has been all along.
I mean, you file reports every year on this. You disclose the whole
thing.
Right, as
does every other member of Congress. Not a great secret. And in the state of Vermont, my wife works with the media, so the media knows. It's not a great deal. Anyhow, what happened is, what I really want to stress is how things happen in this country and how news becomes news. What happens is a reporter wrote, I thought, a fairly nasty article about this, kind of suggesting that what we were doing, while it is legal, you know, really questions blah, 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 and really kind of distorting the amount of money that my family members got. Okay. Anyway, I didn't like the story. All right, big deal. Suddenly, before we can say a moment, the Republican Party here in the state of Vermont is on the phone. The governor has an attack dog there who apparently does this thing all the time. Suddenly, this is on Drudge Report.
Right.
Little story in a paper in the southern part of the state of Vermont. Suddenly, and now why is it on Drudge Report? Because the point is we are now going to forgive Tom DeLay for really because people like Sanders and many, many other people also have put people in their family, on their campaign.
Yeah, you're one of the most prominent progressives, and so what they're trying to say essentially is, see, you know, the other side does it.
Right, but the point here is, so therefore, all of the attacks on Tom DeLay, totally hypocritical, so forth and so on. The truth is, I don't know anybody. I mean, there may have been. To me, you know, if I have no idea if DeLay's wife and daughter got too much money. I really don't know. But the issue about Tom DeLay is not that. The issue is all of the things that I mentioned earlier. The fact that this guy is an extreme reactionary doing terrible things. The goal of this whole thing is to flip discussion away from what DeLay does to say, look, other people are doing this campaign thing. All of the attacks on DeLay are hypocritical.
Yeah.
And then it zooms around the stratosphere. It zooms and it goes from Drudge to Limbo to the Washington Times, to the O'Reilly Factor, and so forth and so on. So it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, being sucked into the right-wing talk machine has to be
and this happens all
bizarre.
Of the time. I mean, the other day was my day.
Yeah.
But it happens all of the time. So what does not happen? What does not happen is that, in fact, why are people critical of Tom DeLay? Well, we're critical of Tom DeLay because he threatens judges in our independent judiciary for making decisions that Tom DeLay doesn't like.
This is one of the most amazing things to me, Bernie, is that DeLay and Dobson and all these other guys, they're all running around going, these judges, they're answerable to nobody. This is terrible. They're answerable to nobody. Isn't that how it was set up, Bernie?
That's right. We're supposed to.
Isn't that the idea?
Right. But that is huge. I mean, it's this whole movement toward an authoritarian society. Some of us are concerned that DeLay is running the House in an increasingly authoritarian manner, as I've mentioned on the show before. I had an amendment on the floor of the House last summer, which won at the end of regulation time, 17 minutes, to delete or make substantial changes in a provision of the USA Patriot Act. It won. We had a lot of Republican support. Instead of gaveling down the roll call at the end of regulation time, DeLay kept it open another 20 minutes to twist arms to defeat my amendment. They did the same for
to actually change the votes, to reverse
sure,
votes.
To Republicans.
To reverse votes.
That's right. It's like at the end of a football game, your team wins. They say, hey, we're not going to stop the clock. Keep it open another quarter. You have a guy, I mean, I'm just talking about what's going on in terms of abuse of power in the House. You have a guy named Chris Smith. Chris Smith is not a household name. He's a conservative Republican from New Jersey who happens to be a very honest and decent guy. Chris worked his way up the ladder, became chairman of the Veterans Committee in the House. Chris was taken off of that chairmanship, taken off of the entire committee. You know why? Because he supported veterans' rights and was going to fight the Bush administration.
You can't do that. You can't do that. I mean, you know, just a few days ago, George Bush, on the day that he was out being photographed with the troops, His minions in Congress were voting down $1.something billion for returning troops.
Absolutely. This Bush budget and the Republican budget is a disaster for veterans. It'll meet substantial cutbacks in medical care and depriving many, many veterans of access to VA health care. So a fellow named Joel Heffley. Joel Heffley, a very conservative Republican. But you know what? He was a member of the Ethics Committee, which by definition has to be bipartisan. And he cast a vote on that committee last year that Tom DeLay didn't like. You know what happened to Heffley?
Yeah, well.
Taken off of the committee.
They pulled him off the committee, and they replaced him with one of Tom DeLay's toadies, one of these guys from Texas who's been taking money from Tom DeLay, owes his political life to Tom DeLay, and you think he's going to criticize
him? So the point here, I don't want to spend this whole time beating up on Tom DeLay, but my point is how the media works and how the right-wing attack machine goes forward. So this whole effort, where I got caught up in, was an attempt to say, see, all of these attacks on poor old Tom DeLay are unfair. Meanwhile, back in the ranch, the real issue is that this week, in just a horrendous act, the Republican leadership, with the support of a number of Democrats, pushed through the repeal of the permanent repeal of the estate tax, which will cost us over a 10-year period $290 billion. Tom, every nickel of those benefits goes to the richest 2%. Half of the benefits go to the richest 0.1%.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
this was basically the Walton family legislation.
Exactly, and the Mars family. You know Mars candy bars?
Yeah.
They were the ones, one of the families that were pushing this very, very hard. So while we're cutting back on veterans programs, cutting back on Medicaid, cutting back on the needs of the middle class, a gigantic tax break, and boondoggle is given to the very wealthiest people in this country.
Yeah. And this is, and the whole point of the, and plus the bankruptcy bill yesterday, too.
Right.
We can get into that. But the whole point of the estate tax in the first place, when Teddy Roosevelt was campaigning for this way back when, the Republican Roosevelt, I mean, you know, when this thing was first put into place, it was because the founders of this country were really clear that we had left an oligarchic, aristocratic,
right,
permanent landed gentry status nation where there was a permanent wealth class that essentially held power by virtue of their wealth, and they didn't want to have that. They had no problem with people being comfortable, being affluent even, being, you know, country squires, being you know, moderately wealthy, million, 10 million, 100 million, but when it came to billions, they figured that this, particularly if it was multi-generational billions, that this could be the beginning of the end of democracy. And this is the beginning of oligarchy, a banana republic. And that's why we had the inheritance tax, and they just blew it away. You're right. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We have Bernie Sanders on, Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you'd like to call in, our number 1-866, toll-free across the United States, 866-889-8894.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiteRoseSociety.org, American FM, on live365.com, Sirius Satellite Radio, and radio stations from coast to coast. Special greetings to Tom Seaborn, by the way, one of our program directors at, at KGOE, I was just going to say, I was pretty sure who called yesterday and thanked us. It's a welcome to the West Coast. Here we are, broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Hey, Bernie.
Hi, how you doing?
We are back, and we have the phone lines are absolutely lit up. So shall we take a few phone calls here, or did you want to wrap up any of that rant stuff? Okay, let's go right to Patrick in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Patrick, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
How you doing, Bernie Sanders? I loved your appearance this morning on the Howard Stern show. And
did you?
I think you should make more appearances on that show before he makes the move to satellites to try to get through to these people that don't realize that our democracy is being hijacked, and you're one of the very few people that have the the nerves to get up there and try to get legislation through to fix it.
Well, let me tell you something, Patrick. I was a little bit nervous about going on that show.
Don't be nervous. Howard's a little bit crazy, but
all
his fans are very smart, or the majority of them are very smart, I can't say.
No, and you're right. And he is doing a very good job on this whole issue of censorship. And as you may know, Patrick, I want to give the mic back to you. But just today we learned that the president, I didn't know this, although Stern mentioned it on the air this morning, the president is now supporting this unconstitutional concept to take the so-called indecency laws to cable.
Yeah. This is the expansion of the daddy state, Bert.
Well, it's more than that. It's a real threat to censorship. I didn't want to cut Pat off, though. Pat,
he's still there.
Okay, Pat, you have a question or thought?
Yes, I've got a question. I work in construction, used to be running my own business, and did very well when I was in business, and have been since forced out of my business because of illegal labor. We have an illegal labor enforcement immigration office that has got a phone number, but I call them every single day because every day I'm surrounded by illegal labor everywhere I work.
Yep.
And I call them every single day. They never pick up the phone. After 3:30 in the afternoon, sometimes I get an answer machine explaining that, you know, their hours are up until 3:30 in the afternoon and that you can either come down and make a complaint in person. But, I mean, what can we do when our...
No, you're right. That's absurd.
Never pick up the phone.
This is a government agency that shuts down at 3:30?
It shuts down at 3:30, but then they never, ever pick up the phone. I mean, I have to actually physically take myself away from my job, away from making money, to go down there and...
Give your congressperson a ring, Pat, and tell him or her what's going on and see if they can make a call. That's unacceptable that an agency shuts down at 3:30.
Yeah, I really couldn't believe it. All right, well, thank you very much for
answering
my question.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Yeah. You guys have a good day.
Thanks, Patrick. And the number, the toll-free number for Congress is 1-877, and it's SOB as in, it actually stands for Senate Office Building. Which is where the phones were answered when this number was first put in, and USA Senate Office Building. So it's 1-877-SOB-USOB. So it's really easy to remember, Patrick. You can call and just ask for your member of Congress there. If you're not even sure who it is, they will probably be able to tell you. So Sandy in Silver Springs, Maryland on the line. Hey, Sandy, we've only got about a minute before we've got to go to a break. What's up?
Well, I have a question regarding Mr. DeLay, and I'm tired of hearing about him, but... With his recent comment about the justices in the judicial system, if one of the right-wing right-to-lifers decided to take him up on that and kill one of these judges, do you think that Mr. DeLay could be charged with criminal conspiracy or inciting?
Well, Sandy, let me just say this. We don't have a lot of time before the break. The critique of DeLay is that he was outright and basically threatening judges. We're going to get you, in so many words, is what he said, because you voted against what we wanted you to do. But there are people in the Senate who have been almost defending, saying, well, we can understand why people
Cornyn,
be violent.
John Cornyn.
Yes, that's right.
It's the same thing. And then you've got the whole right-wing echo machine all saying the same thing. I mean, it's the intimidate the judges routine. Why? Because the judges are supposed to be independent. It's the last branch of government that DeLay can't intimidate. Anyway, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. We'll be right back.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, trouble. Come on in. You talk about heartaches. Where in the world you been?
And
welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour of the Tom Hartman Program. You're in the Democracy Zone. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, toll-free nationwide, and I believe in Canada as well. If you'd like to call and be on the program, Joe in Marco Island, Florida is on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
How are you guys? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Joe.
A big fan of Tom here, and I'm a newly subscriber to Sirius Satellite Radio. Just a couple of comments about censorship. One about Rush Limbaugh. He had said the word for fellatio, which BJ's, you know, yesterday. Hope he gets fined, like Stern's been getting fined. And at the end of the show, of course, the guy never apologizes for anything. What I hear him talk about is, oh, you know, thanks to Monica and Bill, now that fellatio has been spread to the high schools. I mean, is this guy for real? Like it never existed before Bill Clinton? And it's just not a reason for him not to talk about the issue, to talk about this nonsense. And I hear people down here, I'm in such a Republican little part of Florida here, I got my truck keyed for having a carry sticker on, you know, on my truck. And I say, I give up, you know what I mean? You try to organize something and get young kids to the polls. I kept taking kids on election day, and I got my truck keyed for it, you know, people writing on my truck, calling me, you know, a traitor. And I have a little brother serving in Iraq, you know what I mean? I don't know.
All right, these people, Joe, you hang in, and don't let anybody call you a traitor, especially at a time when you have a brother in Iraq. Standing up for American constitutional rights and for working families, last I heard, is not traitorous. It's what America is supposed to be about. And a lot of these people have no respect for dissent. A lot of these working people are getting manipulated by big money interests and are working day and night against their own best interests. So you hang in there, Joe, and don't let anybody tell you what to think.
Some of these supposedly middle-class people are voting for people they don't care about. They don't understand that. They're voting on a gay rights issue.
That's right. Well,
gay marriage. And it's like, can't you see? These people don't care about you.
Yeah, and they don't care about gay marriage either. I mean, is that bill being pushed through Congress? I don't see it. Everything I see is economic. It's all about the rich.
What has W done? One thing as far as stopping gay marriage. Not one thing that they voted on.
Well, Joe, you touched on an interesting point. The dynamic of America and what Republican politics is largely about today is it's primarily run by and to benefit the wealthiest people in this country. So yesterday we saw the in terms of the repeal of the estate tax the other day, giving them hundreds of billions of dollars to go to the richest 2%. That's the real dynamic of what goes on. We have a trade policy supported by multinational corporations that are sending millions of good-paying jobs to China and other low-wage countries. That's the reality. Now, to get elected, what they have to do is they throw red meat out to working people who don't understand these issues, and they say, vote for us because we're against gay marriage. We're against abortion. And a lot of people, unfortunately, fall for that. And what we have got to do is do a lot of educating and a lot of organizing. And in many respects, we're making some progress. So don't give up, and you hang in there, Joe.
Yeah, step by step. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Dallas, Texas, on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I got two questions for Congressman Sanders. First question is, when we talk about making all these tax breaks permanent and so on, I don't hear anybody going back and talking about why we put the tax breaks in at the first place. We put them in 2001 because at that time we had a surplus and we were arguing about the different ways to return the surplus to the people because they had overpaid the taxes. We wanted to have, I know that there was one a movement to say, well, okay, let's have a one-time rebate. Oh, no, we had to put taxes in. Now we put the taxes in, and now we say that the reason we put the taxes in was for job promotion. Well, we haven't promoted that many jobs or whatever, but why don't we go back and say that, okay, it was really put in to return a surplus where we had over-collected, and now we are in huge record deficits, and therefore there should not even be any discussion of extending tax breaks.
Okay. John makes a very good point. I should tell you, John, that the idea of doing that rebate, that's something that my office worked with a number of other members of Congress to do. It was a $300 rebate. We said, everybody get $300 rather than giving huge tax breaks to the richest people in the country. But your point is well taken. It's one thing to talk about a tax break for the middle class in general, and especially if you have a surplus. It's another thing to talk about huge tax breaks when we have record-breaking deficits, record-breaking national debt, and all that you're doing there is passing on this burden to our kids and our grandchildren, and that is not acceptable.
Yeah,
Go ahead,
John.
I was just going to say is that the small amount of tax breaks that go to the middle class people is very, very minimal, but they say, oh, we get a little bit,
we get a little bit.
In reality, that tax break costs them more to sustain our debt than what they're actually getting.
That's exactly right, John. But also what happens when you give these tax breaks, the federal government cuts back on education, Medicaid, the states have to pick it up, and you're going to get your taxes raised at the other end.
Yeah.
But your point is well taken. What these guys do in the Republican leadership, they're not stupid. What they say is, all right, listen, we're going to give the bulk of the money to the rich, of course. Those are the people who provide our campaign contributions. We'll throw a few bucks to the middle class and working people. And then we can say, look what you are getting. The truth of the matter is that the bulk of the tax relief, of course, goes to the wealthiest people and the large corporations. And giving it away when we have a huge deficit is unconscionable, especially from so-called conservatives who are supposed to be fiscally responsible.
Yeah, and not only that, you'll recall, Bernie, and thanks for that call, Joe. You'll recall, Bernie, that the way that Bush was selling this thing was to create jobs. You know, oh, we're in a recession now, you know, a little later on. And he had this thing of $550 billion will create a million jobs. If you divide a million into $550 billion, that's $500,000 per job. In fact, here's Bush saying it very quickly.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than a million new jobs.
That's $500,000 a job. Why not just pass the money out? I mean, why didn't the media, everybody reported that, and nobody just divided one number by the other and said, he's proposing paying $500,000 per job to create it. This is nuts.
And, of course, his whole job creation record has been dismal.
Yeah.
And many of those new jobs that they're reporting, and they're very proud of, in fact, are government jobs.
Yeah, there you go.
Not in the private sector.
Moving along, Nick in Tennessee on the line. Hey, Nick, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders on the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, just a little bit of a plug for you and Bernie and Sirius Radio. I just bought a new Chevy truck that has XM radio in it. I had to go out and have a Sirius installed so I could listen to your program and listen to Bernie. And if I'm lying, I'm dying. That's gospel truth.
Good on you, Nick.
I probably do 30,000 miles a year on the road. I work for a labor union. Listen to you guys all the time. I've never heard of Bernie Sanders before. God, is he great.
Yeah.
Keep it up. And anyhow, like I said, little plug for all three of you.
Thank you.
Nick, thanks. Okay. Thanks very much. Keep up the good work there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Nick. That was sweet. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in Houston on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Yeah, I was curious. Back a few years ago, Tom DeLay instituted or the redistricting plan in Texas, which allowed a lot of Republicans to get a lot of Republican congressmen to get elected. I'm here in Houston, so there was a big fight about that. A lot of congressmen in the state, Congress actually left the state so there wouldn't be a quorum. We went back and forth. Finally, they all came back, and the redistricting plan was finally withdrawn. I think it was taken to Ashcroft, of course. He said it was okay. Is that dead now? Is there nothing else they can do about that?
That's a good question, Brian. I don't know that I know everything. I think there may be some court, some issues still in the courts. The issue there was that when the Republicans got the majority in the Texas legislature, strangely enough, you had a guy from Washington, Congressman DeLay, urged them to redistrict, to do as Brian said, to make sure they created districts which would give Texas more Republican members of Congress. That was quite unprecedented. Supposed to do that every 10 years. He did it as soon as the Republicans got the majority. He is under investigation on that issue for allegedly raising illegal campaign contributions to fund that effort. That's certainly something that is ongoing.
So it might come back around to bite him. Brian, thanks a lot for the call. And you're there in Texas. I mean, keep up the pressure on your local elected officials as well as your state and national officials from Texas to do something about that.
Well, can I make one other comment?
Sure.
The district I live in, I go to the polls to vote, and there's nothing but Republicans there. I can't vote for a Democrat if I wanted to. I shouldn't say that, but I mean, as far as congressman goes, it's not possible. There's just not there.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, DeLay is not enormously popular within his own district, despite a lot of money that he has obviously to spend at his own reelection. If my memory is correct, I think he got like 55% against the fairly unknown.
Yeah, you're right, he did.
So, you know, again, it's the same old story, is that we have to rally our troops, organize our people, educate our people, and get people to vote for their economic interests. And if we do that, we're going to do just fine.
Keep at it, Brian. In other words, thanks a lot for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Kevin in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how are y'all doing? I just have one question. And, you know, we're talking about the inheritance tax, eliminating the inheritance tax, and how it's just a big tax break to people. But I don't think that we realize the longer-term effects of why we had the inheritance tax. And that's primarily to break up the big estates so we don't end up with a big aristocratic land-holding society like they have in Europe. One of the first things we did when we got the Louisiana Purchase, during the Louisiana Purchase, was we put in inheritance tax laws so that there was enough land available for Americans that were going into the territories to purchase, because it was all owned by big Creole landowners. And I wonder why these issues are never raised.
And that was when Jefferson was president, by the way.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. It was in 1805 that
right.
did that.
Right. Bernie,
well,
your
Kevin,
thoughts on this?
First of all, Kevin is absolutely right. You know, if we believe that we are a democratic society, you don't want huge holdings and huge amounts of wealth to be transferred from father to son to create these huge dynasties. That's not what America was originally intended to be. And I think Tom just spoke to that very forcefully a few moments ago. I got to tell you that on the floor of the House, some Republican guy got up and said, this is a socialistic concept. Well, I think it came with, what, Teddy Roosevelt, was that, Tom?
Well, it came with Thomas, yeah, that's when nationally, but I mean, it started with Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
Yeah, in 1805. I mean, and they had been discussing it before that. We separated ourselves from a country that was run by an oligarchy, by you know, a small number of very wealthy families who controlled the House of Lords
and
the king.
And what we're seeing today is that as the gap between the rich and the poor gets wider, as the rich have more and more wealth, they are using that wealth in precisely the way that people like Jefferson were worried about.
They own
the media. They own the political parties. And therefore, they keep passing legislation and move public opinion in the direction that benefits them. So you have poor people not voting, working people not getting information that's relevant to their lives, and the rich get richer. And I think Tom used the proper word. We are moving toward an oligarchy in this country, and that is very dangerous.
Yeah, and it's not at all what the founders had in mind. Dana in Texas on the line. Hey, Dana, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman Sanders.
Hi.
I wanted to ask Congressman Sanders about, you know, you're talking about the majority leader. We won't name his name, but wasn't it illegal what he did in Texas, the redistricting? Wasn't that illegal?
Well, that's what they went to court about, and certainly the Democrats argued that it was, that just because you have a majority, you can't suddenly redistrict.
You're supposed to do it every year that ends with zero, right? Right after the census, every 10 years. Every 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, so they took that to courts. I think they did not do well in the courts. They still may be in the courts. But what's also under investigation is DeLay allegedly receiving campaign contributions in an illegal way to create that process by which they were able to manipulate the legislature.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Dana. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Cheryl in Arcata, California, on the line.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for being on the air. I appreciate your Democratic voice.
Thank you.
I had a question.
Although I'm an independent voice.
Okay.
Nonetheless.
We'll put you in there with the democracy.
Oh, well, democracy, yes, I'll go for
yes,
that.
Yes, okay. My question for Congressman Sanders is, I wondered if there was any kind of legislation coming down the pike for closing the sees the American tax loopholes
yes.
that corporations get when
what we call expatriate.
Exactly.
Offshore corporations,
yes.
basically.
Yes, sure. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the caller's name, Tom.
It was Cheryl.
Cheryl. Yeah. Cheryl, we, I believe it was last year. The answer is yes, there is legislation. And interestingly enough, we offered an amendment as part of a narrower bill. It's called the Export-Import Bank. Money goes into an agency, which I have serious problems with. And what we said is that no corporation that moves offshore in order to avoid American taxes should be able to get taxpayer money through the Export-Import Bank. And you know what? It actually won on the floor of the House. We had widespread Democratic support. A number of Republicans voted for it. Needless to say, it was killed in the conference committee and never became law. But there is a lot of anger at companies that are attempting to avoid paying their fair share of taxes by moving to the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and countries
well,
like
this
that.
Is like Halliburton did with Kellogg Brown and Root
yes.
For the Iraq money, and this was why Kerry voted, you know, against the second authorization, that $87 billion, was because they stripped out the provision that said you had to be an American corporation paying American taxes
right.
to take American taxes, and it was like the Halliburton provision. It's incredible. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Your voice for reason and sanity. 1-866-889-8894. We're on with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Janet in Oneida, New York on the line. Hey, Janet. I think Janet's there. Let me try pushing this button instead. Janet?
Yes.
Hey, there you go.
Hey. I'm calling about the Republicans' continuing effort to end the filibuster. I just read an article in the New York Times by David Kirkpatrick that says that Bill Frist is going to,
The nuclear option is going to happen.
Yeah, the nuclear option is going to happen. And they are supporting a telecast that's been organized by the Family Research Council. That's going to be broadcast to a number of churches, supposedly reaching millions. And essentially it says the filibuster is against people of faith. The filibuster was once abused to protect racial bias and now is being used against people of faith. And I just wanted your comment on that.
Well, thank you very much. And I think we have to look at this filibuster issue in a broader context. And that is certainly never before in recent American history have the leadership in Congress and the White House been using their power to put down minority points of view to the degree that we are seeing. And it goes on and on. It's not just intimidating judges who disagree with Tom DeLay's. It's the USA Patriot Act and using the government, for example, to go into libraries to monitor the reading habits of the American people. It is punishing chairmen in the House of Representatives who takes positions different than the leadership. And on it goes. It is pushing this so-called indecency in the media, which will make a lot of radio shows, television shows, looking over their shoulder about what they're putting on the air, wanting to expand that unconstitutional or at least very undemocratic concept to cable as well. What I fear very much is that, you know, the Republicans have a majority in the House and the Senate. The one impediment to them appointing extreme right-wing people to the judiciary is the filibuster. And they want to do away with that even more power over the minority.
Yeah. And this is not a good thing. It's not healthy for democracy. For 200 years, it's worked just fine the way it is. And these extremists want to change it, eh, Bernie?
That is exactly the case.
Yeah, it's over the top. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us again this week. We'll see you again next Friday, Bernie.
Okay, talk to you again next Friday.
Thanks a lot. Great to have you on. We still have some callers on hold if you want. We'll pick up your calls after the top of the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where reason is our lifestyle choice.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, news without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman radio program, also known as the pill that will help you escape the matrix. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, toll-free across the United States, 866-toll-free-889-8894. It's Friday. You can call about pretty much anything you want. I have some things to talk about. In fact, in the third hour, probably we'll get to it. It's just some amazing stuff on the recount and the crimes that it's now starting to leak out happened in Ohio in the last election. But we will get to that. In the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Rob Call and David Swanson on for our Best of the Rest of the News segment. But first, let's go to the phone line. Scott in Michigan is on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up today?
Hey, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
Fell upon your radio station about a year and a half ago, and have been hooked since. Quick little story. My brother used to dog me during the election about voting for Kerry.
Scott, and just a quick question. Which station are you listening on?
You know, it's just a little tiny Salem Canton station. I don't even know what the call letters are.
Oh, okay.
But he used to dog me all through the election. Big, huge Bush supporter. Went to multiple rallies and whatnot. And he has since, about a month ago, called me and apologized for voting for Bush. He is totally turned off how he phrases it. The religious American Taliban have taken over the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But he had a really interesting thought. And his thought was that he thinks there are enough liberal Republicans that if they could be convinced to switch parties to just an independent, just wrestle the power away from the Republicans. And I was actually calling to talk to Bernie about that, what his thoughts would be on that.
Well, I can tell you that what he would say, which I agree with, is that there are a lot of Republicans, elected Republicans, members of Congress, of the House of Representatives and of the Senate, who are absolutely horrified by what this administration is doing, who are horrified by the people who have taken over this party, and some of them, a very small number of them, but some of them are actually speaking out to that effect. A larger number of them are simply living in terror, because Tom DeLay is you know, not only the House Majority Leader and all that kind of stuff, he's also a bully. He's an absolute tyrant. He punishes people and relentlessly. I mean, look at what happened to Nick Smith in Michigan with the Medicare bill. And they came to Nick and said, you know, change your vote and we'll give your son $100,000 and we'll make sure he becomes a congressman. And Nick said, you know, I'm not going to take a bribe. I don't think this is right. And so guess what? His son never made it. I mean, they nail. If you don't go along with them, you know, the House of Representatives is reelected every 2 years, particularly in the House. If you don't go along with Tom DeLay, you're toast. You're toast. He controls enough money and that he can reach right down into the local apparatus of any state in this country and throw somebody out of office or replace them. And everybody in the House and Senate knows that. So there's a lot of people living in terror. There's a few who are speaking up, mostly in the Senate, because that's every 6 years, and they're a little less dependent on internal money, you know, on internal party money, and more connected with their local districts in terms of this longer fundraising arc. But the tide, in my opinion, is turning. It has already begun to turn, and what is happening is that Americans are realizing that a small group of essentially right-wing cranks have taken over the Republican Party. And this is why I wrote this piece a year and a half ago for Common Dreams called Republicans, Please Take Your Party Back. Because I think it's starting to happen. Just as I encourage people on the air, I encourage Democrats and progressives and Greens to show up at Democratic Party meetings, because we do have a two-party system in this country. I still think that people should be working with the Green Party at the local level, building strong Green parties and forging coalitions with the Democratic Party. But at the national level, because we're stuck with this two-party system until we get instant runoff voting, we need to be reaching out and reaching in and taking over the Democratic Party. And I believe that the Republicans, those people who historically would have agreed with Republican ideals, however they want to define those, should be taking back the Republican Party. Because what happened was 25 years ago, Pat Robertson, who really kicked off this whole thing, this was before he sold his network for $1 billion, Pat Robertson decided that he was going to take over the Republican Party, him and his friends. And they did.
Oh, I was actually
they
a part
did.
Of that.
You were part of that?
Yep, I was. I used to be a right winger myself.
Okay, well, you're going to have to do 20 rosaries or whatever. I mean, we're going to have to come up with some penance for you, Scott. Scott, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
It's good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Ed in Kansas on the line. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better.
Well, good. I wanted to ask Bernie about this. I've asked both of my senators and my congressman this question. Back months ago, when our death toll in Iraq was, I think, about 1,200, and we were claiming 10,000 injured, a couple of things happened that caught my attention. First, I heard a fellow from Operation Truth on one of the, maybe it was Air America, and he said that, well, yeah, there are 10,000 injured, but 26,000 had been evacuated from theater.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of those injured are dying in Germany or dying in the United States,
and they're not
listed as combat casualties.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, at that same time, a chopper went down, and I forget the number, 6 or 9 guys died in that chopper, but it wasn't shot down. It went down because of a mechanical defect.
Right.
And they said, well, these won't be counted.
That's right.
So my real question is, how many guys have we killed over there? How many guys have we had killed over there?
You mean Americans?
Americans, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. The Defense Department is not forthcoming with those numbers. And in fact, now they've come up with their own TV network, the Defense Department TV network, and they're making this available to veterans. They're pumping it into the veterans' hospitals. They're pumping it in some communities where they've got Army bases. It's actually on the local cable system.
Yeah.
But in particular, those vets who are returning, who are the wounded vets, in some cases, this is the only thing they can watch, is this 24-hour Pentagon channel with all the feel-good and make-happy news. And they come right out and say, the Pentagon comes right out and says, oh, we're doing this to keep up troop morale. In other words, they're censoring any criticism of Rumsfeld, not going to be seen.
Yeah.
And on it goes. I mean, so.
Well, I'll tell you what deeply concerns me.
We don't know. They don't know.
Yeah. What deeply concerns me is I've written, as I said, to both of my senators and my congressman about this. And what, thinking about 26,000 versus 10,000, that's 2.5 times as our 1,500
right.
dead. Is that 4,000 guys that have died? You know, we don't know this. But my congressmen and my senators won't answer the question. What they do is they say, we're going to forward your letter to the Defense Department.
Yeah. Yeah, and good luck getting any kind of response.
Well,
because they don't consider themselves even, they're not in the business of constituent service. They're, and they're not elected, and they don't respond to anybody. They're part of the executive branch, and they answer to the
but
president.
But when I ask questions about intelligence and things before, and they've done the same thing, I mean, they have now referred a half dozen of my letters to the Defense Department. It kind of scares me. What is the Defense Department going to do with this information now?
Well, you're probably on a list. I mean, COINTELPRO is back. You know, this very aggressive surveillance of undesirables is back. It is absolutely back. And nonetheless, I don't believe that it should stop us from speaking out and getting active.
We just need to keep doing it.
Have you written letters to the editor of your local paper describing the horrible treatment you've gotten at the hands of, and then name the elected representative?
Yeah.
Well, just keep it up. That's all I can say. Just keep it up.
my senator is Brownback. I mean, what can you do?
Well, what you can do is you can start speaking out. You can start writing the letters to the editor. You can start contacting the local news organizations. You can join the local Democratic Party, the local Republican Party, and show up at the meetings. I mean, there's a lot that you can do, Ed. There's a lot that you can do. This is an all-the-time thing. You know, put a bumper sticker on your car. Put a sign out in front of the house. I mean, there is no shortage of things that you can do. And I'm sure you're probably doing many of them already. I know you call the program from time to time. So
Yeah.
So
okay,
keep it up. Yep, I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, Ed. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Yeah, it's Tim, Tom. Thanks for
I'm sorry,
call.
Tim.
Not a problem.
Spring
break.
Yeah.
I had a chance at spring break to read Lou Dobbs' book, the one about corporate America.
How is that? You know, I've seen him plug that on the air, and I have not read it.
You have got to pick it up.
Really?
It is phenomenal what is going on. I always thought it was the manufacturing and labor-type jobs that were getting shipped over.
No, it's everything.
It's way beyond that.
It's everything
and
now.
And not only that, your tax money's paying state and local jobs to go overseas as well.
Yeah.
It's just insane what's going on. And I think the Democratic Party, progressives, need to start talking about this as a moral issue.
Yeah.
Just like the Republicans throw it in your face about morality, this is a moral issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It has to do with the ability of our families to survive. You want to have... You want to do something to encourage marriage, for example, the survival of marriage. You want to strengthen marriages. Give people good jobs. You know, the number one thing that causes marriages to break up is fights over money.
Absolutely.
Give people good jobs.
And on top of that, I'm paying a lot of money to send my kid to a Catholic school and give him a good education to get a step ahead. But even the jobs they want, he's got examples in there about how they're getting taken by either people on these H-1 visas and or getting shipped overseas for somebody to do it. For $25,000 that they don't ever pay any taxes on here. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is beyond crazy. Although, from the viewpoint of the people who are doing it, that is the multinational corporations who are profiting from this, who have no allegiance to the United States of America, and the members of the House and Senate that they have bought and paid for, from their point of view, it is not at all crazy. It is the absolute right logical thing to do because it builds enormous amounts of wealth for a small number of families and a small number of corporations who are largely responsible for the majority of this. And in fact, if you go back and the Wall Street Journal of all publications broke the story. I did a whole hour on it on this program. The whole thing started back in the late 80s with Jack Welch, the guy that they're all lionizing, and they're all, you know, the chairman of GE or the CEO of GE back then. And everybody's, oh, isn't he wonderful? He was the first one to go to India and have them pitch to him the idea of outsourcing. And he began this whole thing of outsourcing white collar jobs. Although, you know, you've got Phil Knight and others who had done the blue collar job long before that. So it's been going on for a while. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Tom in Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Now I'm reading two books at the same time. I went and picked up your We the People, and now I have and What Would Jefferson Do? So it's like switching back and forth.
Great.
But, yeah, it's such an eye-opener, and it's just great stuff. And I use a lot of that in arguing. And you just had a caller talk about how when he argues with conservatives, they always throw out this verbal bomb, socialism, right?
Right.
And every time We the People vote in our democracy to make the rules of the game of business, like you say, they try to yell out, oh, socialism, you know.
Right.
And I always remind them, you guys, capitalism is subordinate to democracy, not vice versa.
Yeah, well, I find an easier rebuttal is to say, okay, you don't want socialism. Shall we get rid of our socialist army?
You're right.
Or how about
police
our
police force.
Or, yeah, and then our socialist police force. And I'm assuming you want to get rid of our socialist fire department. Now, some of them actually do want to get rid of our socialist schools. Basically, you know, funded by the government, paid for by we the people. You can call it whatever you want. I mean, they call it socialism. I call it functioning democracy. And you're right, Tom.
Right.
We have to continue to pound on the idea that capitalism and free enterprise and democracy are separate things. We have
subordinate.
Yeah, it's subordinate. Absolutely, it's subordinate. 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The festival was over and the boys were all planning for a fall. The cabaret was quiet except for the drilling in the wall.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 25 minutes past the hour. And we have Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line with a report from Washington, D.C. today. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Well, very interesting day in Washington, D.C. Quiet, but nevertheless interesting as we follow President Bush's nominations, well, some of them to what looks like confirmation and some of them to what looks like, well, not so sure.
Yeah.
When it comes to John Bolton, I've been attending his hearings for the first part of the week and following them closely ever since. It does look to me as though if in the interim period that his vote is delayed, i.e. until about next Thursday, if indeed the Democrats get answers to their questions, that this guy may just suddenly decide to withdraw, that he may not want the job suddenly.
You really think so?
I think it's a possibility. Indeed it turns out that he really is a serial abuser of subordinates.
Oh, well, see, I think all of that's true, but I also think that his appointment is part of a larger plan by the Bush administration to get into place. They've got Goss in charge of intelligence. They would get Bolton into the UN to get into place people who are toadies on the one hand and ideologically with them in this whole neocon perspective, so that when the ginning up for war with probably Syria for the 2006 elections and certainly with Iran for the 2008 elections, so that, you know, when after Cheney retires saying he's got heart problems in 2006, 2007, and Jeb Bush comes in as vice president or whoever it is, they can, you know, the heir apparent comes along, they can have another war going and win another election, because the Republicans have discovered that if they can get a war going, it sure does help with elections. It has in the last two election cycles. So I think Bolton's part of a larger plan there, and I don't think he's going to let go that easily.
I don't think he is either. I'm going to let go of it easily, and I think it's quite likely he will go forward. I think, though, that there may come a point where the embarrassment, which it really is building, certainly in Washington, will be enough that the Bush administration may say, you know something, we've got other guys who can do this job for us. Let's find one.
Yeah.
You know, it
could be, but you know,
I don't know yet.
You know, maybe it's your British sensibilities. In my opinion, these guys have no shame.
Well, I don't.
They just don't care.
Right? No, they don't. They don't. That's right. But when things just keep coming out that really are bad and that translate to the public as bad, in the same way that the Bernie Kerik stuff was bad, although it was different, you know, because it was sex. This guy is a bully. Americans don't like bullies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. And do you think more than 3% of Americans are paying attention to or watching the hearings?
No, I don't think they are. And I think that's one of the things that he certainly does have going for him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see.
we
can flip a coin here, Victoria.
I know.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for the report today, Victoria. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We have just a wee bit of time left here, and let's go to Mal in Grand Rapids. Hey, Mal.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? It's
great.
Last year since I talked to you, and I'd like to say one thing. Thank you for helping open up the eyes of the American people to see the realization of what's going on in the United States.
Yeah, for better or for worse.
And I was just thinking, I got this little sticker in my truck, and anytime I think of Republicans, I got Republicans, and never underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups.
Yeah. Well, you know, both parties have been guilty of this. I think the antidote, as Thomas Jefferson pointed out so often and so well, is information, is an informed public. If we don't have a well-informed populace, that's why I think it's perfectly a good thing, actually, that there's right-wing talk radio out there, as long as there's left-wing talk radio balancing it so people can get the whole story and they can make up their own minds.
Well, the thing that bothers me so much about it is we got more right-wing stations, you know, more right-wing talk shows, then we have our left or center counterparts.
Yeah, well, that tide is turning. That tide is turning, I'm telling you. Their employment opportunities are opening up for progressive talk show hosts. It's all over the
country.
Well,
you know,
I think it's going to change.
One thing about it, I'm going to probably catch a lot of flack about that. So, hey, appreciate the call, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mal. It's good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866. Well, actually, we're gonna go to Ken and Canton. We'll pick up your call on the other side of this, and then we're going to go right into our best of the rest of the news segment. We'll find out what some of the folks in the blogosphere, the webosphere, some of the political activists out there think about what's going on. 29 minutes past the hour.
Thank you.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 and a half minutes before the hour. And Ken in Kenton, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Ken, listening on WSDS, what's up?
Well, I wanted to talk about several things. First of all, I wanted to know about this new book that's called The World is Flat. Are you familiar with it?
I have not read it.
Okay, well, I don't know a lot about it myself, but basically how we used to...
You're talking about Tom Friedman's new book.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar. You know, Tom Friedman is one of the guys who brought us the wonders of free trade with his book, The Olive Tree and the Lexus. Way back 5-10 years ago, he published this book called The Olive Tree and the Lexus, which was talking about how wonderful free trade is. And I don't know how to characterize him. He's a free trader.
Okay, let's change the subject.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And then your other point, because I got to move along. We got a segment here.
I just want to say the first time I saw you was on C-SPAN, I guess it was last year. You're the most intelligent man on talk radio. You know your history, you know your constitution, you know your government, you know your poli-sci. And my parents met at a Henry Wallace rally many, many years ago.
Oh, Henry Wallace, Vice President to Roosevelt.
Henry Wallace.
Yeah, well, thank you. That Henry Wallace was Roosevelt's third, as I recall, Vice President, and he was the one who wrote a letter, an op-ed piece for the New York Times at the request of the editors of the Times, talking about the rise of fascism in America. And it was absolutely prescient. And if you want to read the article about it, just go to TomHartman.com, click Articles on Democracy, and just scroll down to the article's called The Voice of Vice President Wallace Warns It Can Happen Here.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your kind comments. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Now let's go to... here we have David Swanson with DebtSlavery.org and Rob Call, who is with OpEdNews.com, two of the more erudite observers of the scene, and get into our best of the rest of the news segment here for this afternoon. What's happening this week? David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Rob.
Hi, David.
Great
Hi,
to have Rob. You here, David. And Rob, welcome. And welcome to you, too, Rob. And I'm assuming you can hear me, Rob?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know if you heard me or not.
All right, great. David, let's start with you. You have been working. In fact, we were going to have you on the show on Monday, but we were moving from Vermont to Oregon. We're now broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. And, in fact, on Monday I'm also going to be doing, before this program, I'm going to be doing a morning program on KPOJ, the local station here in Portland. Liberal talk radio locally. It'll be great fun. But anyhow, we were moving and it was just general madness, and so we haven't had any guests this week. This is our first day that we've had any guests on. And I know that was before the bankruptcy bill. I did literally several entire hours deconstructing the bankruptcy bill, talking about all the amendments and who voted for them and against them that got shot down to protect working people. Now, yesterday in the House of Representatives, this thing got passed. You've been running this website, DebtSlavery.org, and I know you're a board member of Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, and you've been very active in this. What's your take on what just happened, and what can be done about it?
Well, first of all, congratulations on the new show, which is one more reason for some of us to be jealous of Portland. But, you know, the vote was better than we might have hoped. That is, in the House, we had 73 Democrats vote with the Republicans, with the credit card companies. That's down from 90 last time around. You know, this bill has been pushed for 8 years. And we had four of the members who had been most openly promoting the bill turned around. One didn't vote. Three voted against it. About a dozen who had voted for the nearly identical bill in the past voted against it. And yet you still had every single Republican line up, close ranks, and vote for the bill. And this Democratic split, where a majority voted against it, but 73 went over to the Republicans with no excuse. And and you had just the Democratic leadership was AWOL.
Absolutely. And so the bad news is, like, the mob, you know, busted in our windows, came in, stole all our furniture. The good news is that the mob is a little smaller than the last time a mob did this.
That's about the size of it. The better news is that some organizations are waking up to this fact and being willing to call out these Democrats on this and challenge them. MoveOn.org has threatened, and I expect will follow through on running ads in the districts of these Democrats who voted for this bill. And PDA is ready to
not to mention the Senate Democrats.
Not to mention
the Dirty 18.
The Dirty 18 plus an independent.
Yeah, plus Jim Jeffords.
Right. They there's no excuse for what they did either.
Yeah. This is a crime against the American people, in my opinion. I mean, it is really and seriously and truly. This at the same time that these tax cuts are going through, the House just voted to make end the estate tax. So, you know, we're moving more and more rapidly toward oligarchy, toward the absolute control by extremely wealthy families. So David Swanson, what can people do about it now?
Well, debtslavery.org is just getting started. It's not going to vanish now. And going and looking at that website and finding out where your congressman voted and either thanking them or upbraiding them is just as important as having called them beforehand. We need to make these men and women remember that we're going to remember next year. And we need to make the estate tax fight in the Senate a tough one. We need to make the fight against CAFTA and the energy bill and the possibly moving predatory lending bill extreme fights that make evident to the entire public that there's really a class war going on against working Americans.
Absolutely. And let me just toss in here before you do, Rob, and to call your member of Congress or your senator, you can call either one of them. The toll-free number won't even cost you a penny. It's actually being paid for out of your tax dollars, so you've already paid for it. The telephone number is 1-877. This is one of those toll-free numbers, 877-SOB-U, the letter U, S-O-B. That's the phone number, the toll-free number for the switchboard at the Capitol building. You can even get to the president and the vice president's office if you want to leave them a message. 1-877-SOB-U-S-O-B, and very easy to remember, the main switchboard into Congress. So, you know, well said, David. People can get to debtslavery.org and get on that. Rob Call, Op-Ed News. What's the hot story on your end this week? Or did you want to make a comment about what David was saying?
Well, I just came this morning from a meeting with the campaign staff, which I'm a part of, for Chuck Pinocchio, who you know, Tom. He wants to run against Rick Santorum in the 2006 Pennsylvania presidential. Now that's 2008 when Santorum runs the 2006 senatorial campaign. And what we have in Pennsylvania is Ed Rendell and a couple of other Democratic insiders are attempting to keep their 40 plus year record of picking losers for candidates for Democrats for Senate.
Yeah.
And they've picked a guy who is a Republican light. He's anti-women's rights, pro-life, and they think this is wonderful.
Wait a second. He's pro-life. You mean he's in favor of universal health care?
Well, wouldn't that be nice, but I don't...
But no, he's not. Okay. He's in favor of a living wage for all working people so that families can survive intact?
Well, I think he's more along the lines of those 70-plus congressmen who voted for the...
Okay, so he's not in favor of that. He's is he in favor of life in prison instead of the death penalty?
Well, you know, that's the problem.
So how do these guys call themselves pro-life if they're in favor of death?
Yep. Yeah. Well.
Okay, I got it. Anyhow,
Chuck Pinocchio. What I'm getting at is here we got a guy who... You know, they've blessed him. They've already coronated him, named him the candidate who's going to run against Santorum. And they've actually persuaded two other main people who were looking at running in the race to drop away.
Yeah.
So it's really come down to a choice. You've got Chuck Pinocchio, who I really believe could be this country's next Paul Wellstone.
Hmm.
I'll let that sink in.
That's pretty
strong
remarkable.
Of a progressive leader.
Yeah.
Or we got a guy who's a Republican light who could be the next.
But the Republican light guy has the whole Democratic machinery and the apparatus, and I mean the Democratic Party The Senate can't, you know, a Senate race is a $6 million race. It's a lot of money.
That's what it was the last time Santorum did it. This time it'll be $15 million.
Yeah, so to do that, you really have to have the support of the party. And this guy, is he going to take on the party, or is he going to try and convince the party that he's better than the other guy?
Well, he's got to take on the party. The party has already laid down their allegiance to him. But
not to him, but to the other guy, yeah.
To Casey, to yeah. Bob Casey. Chuck went into this knowing that this was going to be the way it's going to be, and that the only way that we're going to have a progressive candidate running against Santorum is if it's a national process. That means anybody listening in any state who doesn't like Santorum, Rick Santorum, might be able to consider themselves as a supporter of Chuck Pinocchio, especially if you like Paul Wellstone, because that's who he's like. The more I get to know him, I've been trained at Camp Wellstone.
Well, Rob, I got to stop you there. I don't want to turn this whole program into a campaign ad for Chuck Pinocchio, but give us a website where people who are interested, in, particularly in Pennsylvania, can learn more about him.
Chuck2006.com.
Okay, so Chuck2006.com. Now, on your website, opednews.com, what was the top story this week?
Well, probably it was a story by Matthew Fox about the Pope.
Matthew Fox, the some would say kind of New Age or modern Christian religious thinker.
Matthew Fox was a Catholic priest, and he was working in South America with liberation spirituality.
Right, the liberation movement.
Yeah,
liberation and, theology, yeah.
And the Pope really opposed that. And I think the Pope saw that as a threat of communism, and coming from Poland, I think he was really anti that.
Yeah.
And so Matt Fox put together an article that gave a different perspective on the Pope than the altogether wonderful, perfect person, and we got a lot of readers who checked out that article.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Rob. And David Swanson, so the death of the Pope and the various takes on it, in your opinion, were probably, or at least in your experience, looking at, because you can measure who's reading what, or not necessarily who, but how many times a story gets read. David Swanson, what were you seeing as the big story of this past week? We've already talked about the bankruptcy bill, of course. I'm assuming that that's up the top of your list.
Well, it's at the top of my list. It was on page C5 of the New York Times today. And, you know, my priorities are based on the number of people that will be affected and how badly they will be hurt, and in those rare instances, helped or benefited. And so, you know, the bankruptcy bill is a story that very few people, yourself as a prime example, covered extensively beforehand so that people could call in to their Congress members and make their voices heard. That's the purpose media should serve in a democracy. Instead, we've got more coverage than ever the day after. It doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
And even then, it comes nowhere close
to being accurate.
To being accurate, or being even the quantity and prominence of coverage of the Pope's passing or Terry Schiavo ordeal. And
absolutely, David, what do you see coming on the horizon? What do you see for next week? What do you think are going to be the big stories of next week? Or alternatively, what should people be paying attention to next week, which may not make the headlines, but may be really a big story because it's going to affect their lives?
Well, people should start paying attention to CAFTA. CAFTA is
the Central American Free Trade Agreement.
The Central American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA on steroids. Add six more nations to NAFTA. Add additional powers to corporations taken away from states and nations. This is something that's a referendum on the success or failure of NAFTA, and NAFTA has a dozen years of abysmal failure behind it. That's coming up. The energy bill is coming up.
Actually, though, David, you know, NAFTA, you say it has a dozen years of abysmal failure. It has been a failure in terms of the working class of America. It's been a failure in terms of the working class of Mexico. It's been a failure, to some extent, in terms of the working class of Canada. But it's been a tremendous success for the multinational corporations.
Yes,
I mean profits are off the scale. You watch the TV news, you know, where you got millionaire anchor people reading the news about, you know, of interest to millionaires, you know, the stock market, you know, rates and all. Corporate profits are higher than they've ever been. So
I understand, as well as for the poor suffering credit card companies who
we just bailed the government out. Okay, so CAFT is the thing is one of the main things that you'd say to keep an eye on. Rob Call on opednews.com. I'm wondering what you think is the story that you're seeing bubbling under the surface that's going to erupt next week, or that maybe whether it erupts or not is the one that our listeners really should be paying attention to because it's meaningful and important.
I kind of look at things a little differently. I recently wrote a piece that a lot of people are resonating with about how I can't watch the news on TV anymore. It's become kind of like taking some kind of toxic substance.
Yeah.
I put it on a couple minutes and I get disgusted. So I get my news off of the web primarily. A couple of my,
have sources. You checked out the McLaren, the NewsHour, you know, on PBS?
I've looked at it occasionally.
I think they do a fairly decent job. I wanted to put in a plug for them. I know right now there's a big battle about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting being taken over by right wingers, and it has me very concerned. But that in any case, I interrupted you, Rob.
I saw that a while back as I started seeing right wing sponsors getting involved a year or two ago, and that's when I kind of disconnected my heart from public radio.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I really see that. You doing it on talk radio, and I do it with my website. We've got to
take it back. We've got to take it back. I agree. Rob Call with opednews.com. David Swanson, davidswanson.org. Is it .org, David?
.org. You got it.
davidswanson.org and debtslavery.org is new website. Check them out. Thank you both for being with us.
Keep up the great work,
Tom. Thanks,
Tom.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you again. I do appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Uh-oh. I'm just an old truth teller. There you go.
Your candid friend.
Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Glenn in Salem, Oregon on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
First, I want to welcome you to Oregon.
Oh, well, thank you.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, now I get to listen to 6 hours of you a day.
I think that might be a little much.
No, I don't think so.
But I'm going to do it, so we're going to have fun doing it. I love doing radio, and so I'm up for it.
Yeah, I called my representative, Representative Hooley, about mm-hmm. the bankruptcy bill.
Yeah,
and I got her answering machine, so I left a message. But I pretty much knew that was going to be a waste of time, because she was one of the people that sent Hassard a letter to bring it to the floor as soon as possible.
She's a Democrat or a Republican?
She's a Democrat.
You're kidding.
No, as soon as they came out of the Senate, there's a bunch of Democrats.
Yeah, I know.
And she was one of them.
Well, so. Stay on her. I mean, if she's a Democrat, she might be redeemable. Maybe you can bring her back. What's her name again?
Darlene Hooley.
Okay, I'm gonna have to educate myself here. I'm in the process of it, you know, about local politics and things. So.
Yeah, she's the one for the Salem.
Yeah, from
area.
Salem, Oregon. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. Well, Glenn, thanks for the call and thanks for making that call. But you know, call her if you don't get an answer. Keep calling.
I'm going to call and find out why she done it.
There you go. 1-877-SOB-USOB is the number. By the way, on a Friday, most of the members of the House and Senate leave town. You know, usually it's not in session, and they go back to their districts. So Friday's either a travel day, or for those on the East Coast, you know, they get home, and Friday's a local district day. So she may not be in, but, you know, still you can leave a message today.
Monday morning.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, thanks a lot, Glenn. Good to hear from you. Thanks, you too. Good talking to you. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice.
Yes, Tom. Yesterday I'm told that the federal government arrested people, all charged with serious crimes.
Yes.
Now I hear on another radio that they are being given a choice, join the army or go to prison.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about this?
Not that I can speak of authoritatively, Alice. I'm only beginning to learn about it. So let me put that off until Monday, if I may. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
I'll be waiting to hear what you're.
Okay.
Saying.
You're ahead of me on the news cycle. I've been a little behind in my reading. Thanks a lot, Alice. I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Tom Hartman.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the third hour of our program, the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. And increasingly, looking out for the interests of we, the people all around the world. They used to say, as America goes, so goes the world. For better or for worse. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. The only mainstream news organization that carried the story I'm about to share with you. The only mainstream news organization that carried it. The only one was the Beacon Journal. A newspaper in Cuyahoga County, Ohio. The Cleveland Beacon Journal. That's it. That's it. And as I share with you this story, I'll let you decide whether you think that this is a story that maybe CBS should have covered, maybe NBC should have covered, maybe ABC should have covered, maybe CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, even faux news, maybe NPR, maybe NPR, National Public Radio, whatever they call it, television, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's TV arm, maybe other newspapers, maybe the New York Times, maybe the Washington Post should have carried this story. But no, the only newspaper that carried it was the Cuyahoga County, the Cleveland Beacon Journal. Article by Stephen Dyer. The headline, Prosecutor to Probe Cuyahoga County Recount. Keep in mind, the election of 2004 was won by George Bush because 60,000 people in Ohio, Cuyahoga County, having a population well over that. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I would guess it's probably, a million. It's a large metropolitan area. No doubt one of our Ohio callers will let somebody will call in and correct me. 866-889-8894, by the way, is our telephone number. And TomHartman.com, the chat room, if you want to drop in, or maybe one of the folks in the chat room can figure it out and let me know. I've got that window right at the top here. But in any case, the population of Cuyahoga County, the headline, Prosecutor to Probe Cuyahoga County Recount. Now, you will recall that after the election of 2004, there were questions raised about whether George W. Bush actually won Ohio, because the exit polls showed that he lost Ohio, among other states. The exit polls showed, in fact, that he lost the entire national vote by about 3%. But the electronic voting machines all over the country said that John Kerry lost the national vote by about 3%. And there are some people who have a little problem with that. I'm one of them. And not to say that, I think that Diebold is part of a national, or ESNS or any of these other companies are part of some national conspiracy. No, not at all. I just think we have a system that's insecure. It's like, you know, asking the question of how secure somebody's web server might be, or, you know, how secure is the internet? Oh, the internet's totally secure. Never worry about a thing. Everything's just fine. Well, why do we have voting machines hooked up to it when we all know that that's not true? But let me get back to the story. Here's the story. Erie County Prosecutor Kevin J. Baxter is investigating whether the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections broke the law in its recount of ballots from the November presidential election. Did they break the law? Now, here's how it works. If a candidate says, hey, wait a minute, I think something was going on that's wrong. This is how Ohio law works. It's different in every state because each state gets to make up their own election laws. This is part of the 10th Amendment. You know, the all power not reserved to the federal government goes to the states, and all power not taken by the states goes to the people. And the 9th and 10th Amendments, you could argue. But in any case, the state of Ohio has this system where if one of the candidates comes in and says, hey, you know, I think we got ripped off. I don't think this election was square. I think something happened. There was something wrong going on here. There's, you know, something dirty is going. Something's rotten in whatever, you know, in Cuyahoga County. If one of the candidates does that and they pay the fee for the cost of the recount, or at least some of the cost of the recount, if they can come up with the $115,000, I believe, filing fee, then the county does a sample. Well, then the state actually mandates that each county sample 3% of the vote in a certain number of precincts. In other words, they go into 3% of the precincts. Three out of, let's say there's 100 precincts in the county. I mean, I don't know how many are in Cuyahoga County either. They go, oh, here we are. Cuyahoga County population is at 1.4 million. There's no commas there. 000. 000. Yeah, 1.4 million. Okay. Hey, that's quite substantial. Thank you very much. Stop Vote Pirates gave us that information there in our chat room. Yes, Tom, spit it out, Sox. Good on you. Anyhow, so the county has to do a sample of 3% of the precincts of the vote, and if there's any hanky panky in that 3% sample, then that triggers a manual recount of every vote in the entire county. And the charges have been, and first of all, the 3% evaluation got triggered because Michael Badnarik and David Cobb, Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian presidential candidate, and David Cobb, the Green Party candidate, stepped in where John Kerry feared to go, wimp that he was, and said, you know, we'd like to know if this election was valid, because it looks to us like Ken Blackwell was doing a lot of stuff that was at least unethical, if not openly illegal, and you've got all of these voting machines that may have something entirely wrong with them, and we have all these reports from people who talked about, you know, they pushed this button and that thing appeared on the screen and this, that, and the other thing, and we would like to, you know, let's have an evaluation of this. What actually happened? Let's have a real recount. Let's find out who really won this election. We know who's claiming they won this election. 60,000 votes in a county of 1.4 million people would have changed the entire presidential election. 60,000 votes in Cuyahoga County could have changed the entire presidential election. So here we have now a special prosecutor who has been appointed. His name is Kevin J. Baxter. I don't know his party affiliation. And as the article goes on, I'll share parts of this article here with you by Stephen Dyer from the Cleveland Beacon Journal. The article goes on. The complaints allege that the board violated state law because the precincts it recounted were neither randomly selected, which is required, by the way. You're supposed to randomly select 3%, so nobody knows in advance what it's going to be. So they can't, like, set things up and get ready for the, you know, for the thing. Number one, because the precincts it recounted were neither randomly selected, nor was the opening of ballots properly witnessed, were neither randomly selected, nor was the opening of ballots properly witnessed. You're supposed to have members of the political parties there watching, or independent observers watching, making sure that when the ballots are open, people open them up and they don't say, oh, there's a Democratic one, throw that one in the trash. And they're saying that these things were done. And all this was done, again, quoting from the article, all this was done to cover up problems in the November vote. And I find it rather ironic that the word problem is used to describe the possible theft of the president's. All of this was done to cover up problems in the November vote and ensure that no hand be done around the county, the letter from Cobb and Badnarik alleges. The procedure cited included picking 3% of the precincts for a hand count, but the meeting minutes didn't indicate whether the board picked the three. Turned out to be the ones where George Bush won overwhelmingly. Interesting, eh? Well, in fact, according to the complaint filed by both the candidates and their lawyer, Richard Kerger of Toledo, the board did not randomly select 3% of the county's precincts to recount as required by state law. Instead, the county selected recount precincts only from among those with 550 voters or more, which eliminated 90% of the county's precincts, according to the letter. So they were able to know, okay, here's a cutoff point, and 90% of them, we're not going to go near. We're not going to go near them, right? As Kaner put in his shorter email, quote, this is similar to randomly drawing a card out of a deck, but before doing so, eliminating all suits but hearts. In addition, the candidate's letter contends that the way the precincts were chosen seems, quote, to be of a special sort. Those in which U.S. Senator John Kerry received either his largest or second largest number of votes in the ward. This means that the precincts in which President Bush received an unusually high number of votes could not be examined. Excuse me, I misspoke. I said the ones where Bush overwhelmingly won. I meant to say the ones where Kerry overwhelmingly won. This means that precincts in which, so therefore, the ones where it wasn't jiggered, right? This means that precincts in which President Bush received an unusually high number of votes could not be examined. Nor could the precincts in which the third-party candidates received unusually high vote totals. So by picking the count, only the counties with more than 550 voters, which means just the top 10% of counties, and then out of them, picking only the counties where Kerry overwhelmingly won, and saying, okay, we'll recount those. Because it's a pretty safe bet that if any tampering went on, it didn't happen in those precincts, right? The letter went on to say that there is no way this phenomenon could happen at random. The letter alleges that Madam admitted in a 22 December meeting that, quote, ballots in selected precincts have been opened without the presence of witnesses and have been sorted and hand-counted in advance of the original recount, end quote, setting up a test run to assure that the recount would comport closely with the original count so that a full hand count would never be conducted. And is sure enough, it wasn't. Was the election stolen in Ohio? One newspaper had the courage to report the possibility. 20 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
See, this is the thing we're wondering about Ohio.
Could you say it again? I'll be back in a minute. You can get it together by then.
Yeah, see, that's exactly what happened in Ohio. In fact, that was the perfect bumper music for this story. I just have to tell you, this really and truly troubles me. Here you have a county of 1.4 million people, in an election, a national election that was won by 60,000 votes. If 60,000 people had voted for Kerry instead of Bush, John Kerry would be president right now. 60,000 people. And there are clear, credible, specific allegations under oath of election irregularities and crimes, actual crimes being committed in this county, having to do with the vote being rigged in this county, one of the largest counties in the state of Ohio. And the state law says that if a candidate complains and says, hey, wait a minute, there's something wrong here, and they pay their $115,000 or however much it was, that's my recollection, it might have been more, it might have been $140,000, something like that, a little over $100,000. If they pay their fee, then a 3% random sample, a random sample of 3% of the precincts will be looked at, will be recounted. And if those 3% of the precincts show any deviation, any significant problems, that's a flag, and we recount the entire county. And then if the county shows that it's corrupted, then we recount the state. And Michael Badnarik and David Cobb raised the money. In fact, I went to David Cobb's website and gave him $25, and a lot of other people did too. Michael Badnarik and David Cobb raised the money to get that recount happening. And so what do the officials in the state of Ohio do? Well, according to these allegations from Badnarik and Cobb in this letter, what the officials in the state of Ohio did was they went in Cuyahoga County, is they went in and said, okay, we are going to only select certain counties to be recounted, the ones that we know there was no hanky-panky. We're only going to select those ones, which would kind of imply that they know which ones were rigged, right? And by the way, the ones where there were no hanky-panky, John Kerry overwhelmingly won. Maybe he overwhelmingly won others. But the machines flipped the vote, or the machines got hacked, or the voting employees flipped, or, you know, who knows? Who knows? So they hand-picked the counties, or the precincts, rather, within the county, you know, local precinct, like, you know, where you vote. Here, this particular school, this particular church, this particular whatever, you know, they cherry-picked, this is the allegation, they hand-picked the precincts, and they only hand-picked the precincts where Kerry overwhelmingly won, the ones where there apparently wasn't fraud, and those where Kerry should have won and didn't, they did not pick. And these complaints now have apparently enough juice to them, enough reality to them, enough substance to them, that Cuyahoga County has appointed a special prosecutor. There's a special prosecutor looking into this. This is like Watergate. You've got Kevin J. Baxter, Erie County prosecutor, has been appointed by Cuyahoga County prosecuting attorney William Mason as a special prosecutor in the case of the Board of Elections, looking into what happened in Cuyahoga County. Why is it that the only newspaper in the entire United States of America, as far as anybody can tell with a Google News search, and you know, maybe somebody in the chat room will find something else, but and please let me know. I've got the chat room up on the screen here. You can get to it, by the way, by going to tomhartmann.com and click on live chat. And then when you get to the message board, click on live chat. But why is it that the only newspaper in the entire United States to report on this event that literally could change the entire election, or could, I mean, you know, after it's a little after the fact now, but could demonstrate that George W. Bush, that the reason why he has the lowest approval ratings in history is because he wasn't really elected? Oh, I know, you think I'm a nut. There's that Harmon, he's going off on it again. Yep, and they've appointed a special prosecutor. Apparently they think so, too. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Here they come again. Catch us if you can.
Well, it may not be so easy. I gotta tell you, Sue in our chat room just shared with me a clip from judicialaccountability.org. This is just a little sentence out of an article. The second case, filed in January 2002, involved an African-American woman from Sandusky, Ohio, one Christina Harris, who was sexually enslaved by Erie County Prosecutor Kevin Baxter for nearly 5 years under threat of criminal charges. Baxter was one of the Ohio good old boys intimately involved in drug trafficking in the county, end quote. This was an allegation that was made. I can't speak for the credibility or reality of it. I would say probably, well, who knows, but the at the very least it would, perhaps even at the very most. I mean, this sounds like the kind of fringe charge, but what it probably indicates is that Erie County Prosecutor Kevin J. Baxter, now the special prosecutor to find out if there was vote fraud in Cuyahoga County, is part of the good old boy network of the local county, which, of course, should not come as a surprise to anybody. This then brings up the question, and thanks for that, Sue. That was pretty remarkable. And Sue is just must be a whiz with Google. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. This might, before I go to the calls, I just want to say this may have something to do with why the president's job approval rating at 44% right now and falling doesn't seem to be of any consequence to him. Quoting from a story on Yahoo News, I'm not sure where they got it from. There's not a byline here. I'm guessing that this is an Associated Press story. The president was asked Friday about his falling ratings in some polls, and he claimed indifference. Indifference. See, this is just like on 2004, around 11 o'clock at night, Karen Hughes sat George W. Bush down and said, John Kerry won the election. And Bush said, I'm not worried. And Karen Hughes was like, but we've got the exit polls here. Kerry clearly won the election, you know, by millions of votes. And Bush said, don't worry. Just chill out. You'll see. Why was he not worried then? Why is he not worried now? I mean, you compare this with the past. He has the lowest approval rating of any president at this point in his second term in the history of measuring approval ratings. At this point in his second term, for example, keep in mind, George W. Bush, 44%, well under the 50% threshold. At this point in his presidency, Clinton had a 59% approval rating. Reagan had a 56% approval rating. Nixon had a 57% approval rating, and he had an unpopular war going on. Johnson had a 69% approval rating, and Eisenhower had a 65% approval rating. Actually, Harry Truman had a 57% approval rating. And Harry Truman, frankly, wasn't doing all that well with the people as time went on. You know, the Korean War coming along and all this kind of stuff. It's just kind of hard to measure up to Franklin Roosevelt. The Republican backlash was really cranking into gear. So why does George say, well, I don't care, I'm not all that worried about it. Ain't nothing going. You know, what could it be? Because he knows the fix is in? I mean, look at what happened to the people who helped him steal the 2000 election. We know now the 2000 election was stolen and that Al Gore actually got more votes than George W. Bush in Florida when the votes were actually counted by the Washington Post and the New York Times. No matter what measurement you use, if you count the entire state, if you only recounted those four counties that Gore initially asked for, then sure enough, George W. Bush won Florida. But if you recount the entire state, as the news organizations did, whether you measure dimple champ, you know, pregnant chads, hanging chads, drop chads, measure intent of voter, overvotes, undervotes, missing votes, however you measure it, Al Gore won Florida. So who stopped the vote? Who was the person who burst into the room and said, I'm here from the Bush-Cheney campaign, stop the recount? John Bolton. Seriously, the Bush campaign flew him in from South Korea to do this. And look at, you know, he's being rewarded. There are a few other people who are being rewarded. Let me just give you a very quick summary of these people. These are the people who helped steal the 2000 vote. Sue Cobb, a Coral Gables developer. A local business person. She's now the U.S. ambassador to Jamaica. Of the 50, this is an article in the Herald. the Miami Herald, they looked at 50 political appointees found by the Herald to have served as troops in the frantic Florida recount battle. And this is just fascinating. Bolton was part of the legal team and a ballot observer in Palm Beach County. He's the one who burst in and said, and I quote, "I'm with the Bush Cheney team, and I'm here to stop the count." I mean, that's an absolute verbatim quote. Then there's Ted Olson. He was there to stop the count. He's now Solicitor General. There was Robert Zoellick. He was there to stop the count. He's now U.S. Trade Representative. Five lawyers who did research and wrote briefs to fight Florida court challenges are now deputies in the White House counsel's office. Three senior strategists in Tallahassee now hold $130,000 a year jobs as general counsels to cabinet departments. Three members of the window-pounding crowd are now members of the White House staff. Remember the Brooks Brothers protest? Former Texas Transportation System Chairman David Laney, from Texas, at Tom DeLay's request, flew down to Volusia County. Bush appointed him recently to Amtrak's seven-member board of directors. Kevin Martin, now a $130,000 a year commissioner at the FCC, was one of the first national Bush-Cheney people to arrive in Miami from Washington. An FCC commissioner now. New York lawyer Brad Blakeman, who helped organize protests in South Florida and appeared. Now get it, this is a lawyer from New York who flew down to Florida. The Associated Press quoted him as, quote, a Broward County GOP volunteer, end quote. He is today the director of White House scheduling. He was just a lawyer in New York. Associate Deputy Attorney General Stuart A. Levy represented Bush Cheney in Martin County. Boca Raton developer Ned L. Siegel, long a generous donor to the GOP, has been nominated by Bush to serve as the director of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. During the recount crisis, he sued Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections Teresa Lepore in a bid to stop the manual recount of the troubled butterfly ballots on constitutional grounds. Private lawyer Marcos Jimenez joined the Bush-Cheney legal team in Florida and is now awaiting confirmation as U.S. attorney for Florida's Southern District. His brother Frank took 2 weeks of unpaid leave from his job as acting general counsel to Governor Jeb Bush, the president's brother, to assist the Bush-Cheney campaign in the recount battle. He was recently tapped to become chief of staff for the U.S. Housing Secretary Mel Martinez. Miami lawyer Mark Wallace, who fought on behalf of the GOP in Palm Beach County, is today acting general counsel of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, run by Joe Albaugh, who was the Bush-Cheney campaign manager. Does this smell to you? Does this embarrass you? Is it like, have we slipped into Banana Republic land? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Amy in San Diego's on the line. Hey, Amy, what are your thoughts?
Hey, Tom. I was listening to you talking about that that article. What was the newspaper in Ohio? What was it in?
It was the, hang on just a second, let me pull it back out here again. It is down in the stack of ways now. It was in the Beacon Journal.
Beacon Journal, okay. And I also want to tell everybody that's listening, absolutely it should have been on national news. Everyone needs to email and call all their local stations and everything.
Yeah, why are you guys not reporting this? Why is the Akron Beacon Journal the only newspaper in America that is reporting the fact that there's a special prosecutor has been appointed?
Yes. And we all need to go to all of our blogs, the Democratic Underground, everywhere, and post this newspaper article. We need to get the word out. And I think a very good place to send our request to tell them they need to be covering this is Keith Oberman. He's been pretty good on broadcasting things that the mainstream media usually doesn't. He did a pretty good analysis of the Ohio.
I know he actually followed that for a while.
In fact, they had
called us up in Vermont about having me on his program, and we couldn't get a satellite uplink.
Yeah.
And so that was the day he had John Conyers on.
Oh, well, I'm going to email him right now and tell him he needs to get you on the air.
Well, no, I mean, what they do is they get people on because they're, you know, something newsworthy is happening.
Yes.
And I had written that piece for Common Dreams about the vote fraud in Florida, and so that's why he was going to have me on. But, but you know, I lived in this little town in the mountains, and they couldn't get a satellite car there. So, but in any case, I agree with you. I think, you know, people need to be saying to their local media, you know, this, or to the, actually, I would say to the national media, I contact the New York Times, all of their email addresses of the editors are online, the Washington Post, or you can call them. Actually, calling them will probably do better because the spam filters these days cut out so much.
Yeah.
Call the New York Times, call the Washington Post. Maybe no, I'm not going to say the Washington Times. Reverend Moon, you know, he's not going to. But you know, CBS, ABC, NBC, your local affiliates. The Associated Press. I mean, where is the national media on this story? This story actually, what was the date of the publication? This is a couple of days ago this thing was published. This was published on the 9th. What was that, last Saturday or something? I mean, it's just been kind of sitting there, and it took that long for somebody to notice it and email it to me, and I'm like, you know, whoa, what happened here? How come I haven't seen it? And you go out and look, and you Google on it, and it's like, it's not there.
Wow.
And so, Amy, thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it, and great advice. Get active. Get out there and get active. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Dave.
Thank you so much, Tom, for dealing with this directly as you are. You know, to me, the history of this has just been a continuous outrage. The citizens of this country have been seriously duped, and now we have the most destructive group of goons running our government that we could ever hope for.
It's beyond outrage, Dave. We're talking high crimes and misdemeanors here.
Indeed.
We're talking treason, in my opinion.
And they still have these damn machines, and one Tom DeLay is saying we are not going to let that come to the floor. And the Vote America, Help America Vote Act is requiring every precinct to put in one more Diebold machine.
Or some kind of machine. Yeah, it doesn't specify
only,
brand names.
Only one is certified.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Only one.
Okay.
That we just get stuck with it right here in this county, and I was down there making my plea for any way but to accept this.
But now Kevin Sheely, your attorney general, or secretary of state, rather, said no voting machines in California. Arnold got rid of him.
And he's put in a Diebold person.
Yeah. Okay. So,
but in this, and as I understand, it's every county in this state right now, they're being told you must put in at least one, on the idea that it's going to help the handicapped to vote.
Yeah.
We are going to be defrauded yet another time unless something really can rise the people up against this one.
Yeah, this is a serious problem, Dave. Dave, you and I are on the same page on this, and you know, I know that sometimes you're a little more quick to conclude that they have got us, but I am of the opinion that there is a they out there, that it is not the Republican Party, but it is within the Republican Party.
Well,
and they have got us.
Very cautious, and I understand that, Tom, but the evidence is overwhelming. Why did they design this machine? Why have they kept it when everybody's put in bills to modify them? Why have they blocked it?
Why won't they let Rush Holt's bill come to the floor? Why won't they let Hillary Clinton's bill come to the floor just for open discussion? Why not even let these pieces of legislation that simply call for voting machines to be auditable and for a paper trail to exist so that you can do a recount in the event that somebody says, oh, that machine got hacked. I hacked it myself. I mean, we watched Howard Dean on Tina Brown, Topic A with Tina Brown on CNBC in 90 seconds. You could time it. In 90 seconds, we watched Howard Dean hack a Diebold central tabulating machine, you know, the central one that takes all the votes from the entire precinct into one machine and adds them all up and says, okay, here's the total for the county or whatever. He hacked that machine and reversed the outcome of an election in 90 seconds on live network television. Why isn't anybody paying attention to this?
Well, you were pointing out good, solid, empirical proof. This is, you know, to me, the fact that Tom DeLay won't let those machines get modified, that is a criminal act on his part.
Yeah, well, it certainly raises a lot of questions in my mind. Dave, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's always good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, toll-free nationwide. Walt, we seem to be West Coast today here. Walt in Carson City, California on the line. Hey, Walt.
Tom, the problem I see is we've got all of these, what you could call progressive people out there, and all of them working, but there's no coordination. I mean, What I'm suggesting is we get a grant to coordinate the information, you know, like the stories that you bring out,
yeah,
bring and print those, put them into print and send them out in a organized way.
Well, you don't need a grant. Well, right now you have commondreams.org, you have buzzflash.com, you've got truthout.org, you've got opednews.com.
But Tom, they're all doing a different thing.
Well, they are and they aren't. What you'll find is that, you know, if there's a hot story, most of them all will pick it up and do a good job with it.
For example, here, if you say something to somebody like the election was fixed, they think that's ridiculous, and there's no way. I talk to people and say, well, why don't you complain to you, even to your neighbors? And they say, well, I don't have the right information.
I predict, Walt, within 6 months to a year, the conventional wisdom, at least among Democrats and progressives in this country, it's going to be the same as it was in 2000. It took a year for people to figure out that the election had been stolen. And it took a year for the mainstream media to admit it. The New York Times admitted it in an article in the New York Times on November 12th or 13th, as I recall, in 2001. It took them exactly a year. And by a year from now, people are going to be looking back and saying, you know that Hartman guy, he was, everybody thought he was a nutty old crank. You know, Peter Jennings put my article up on ABC Evening News, the article I wrote for Common Dreams about the theft of the vote in Florida, put that up and say, you know, the blogosphere is buzzing with paranoid conspiracy theories or something to that effect.
Yeah.
The New York Times mentioned it on the front page of the New York Times, and it wasn't flattering, I'll tell you. And a year from now, people are going to know. But
we're getting too damn close to the next election.
I know. And it concerns me. Well, thanks for the call. I got to move along. But the thing to do, of course, 1-877-SOB-USOB. Call your member of Congress and say, enough! No more voting machines! 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Yes, get active. Get out there. Start participating. You know, sitting around complaining isn't enough. We have to be active. This is a great, wonderful, marvelous nation. We have a heavy burden, actually, an obligation, a debt, as it were. We have multiple debts. We have the debt of the wrongs that have been done in the name of our nation over the years, wrongs from Native Americans and African Americans, up through things like what happened in Central America when we supported the Contras and the death squads, when Negroponte was down there as U.S. ambassador to Honduras. We have, you know, those that kind of burden. But the other burden that we have is more of a kind of a karmic burden, I guess, I'm not, without getting too esoteric. And that is that back in 1776, the people who put this country together had this brilliant idea that we would have a nation where there wouldn't arise a landed gentry, there wouldn't be a permanent aristocracy, there would not be rule by the rich. We were going to do something different than the way Europe had been run and organized all those years, all that time. And feudal Japan and feudal, I mean, the Incas and the Mayans were feudal systems of governance as well. I mean, you look all around the world. And the founders of this country said, no, we're going to do something different. We're going to do something. We're going to call it democracy. Or we're going to call it a democratic republic, a constitutionally limited democratic republic, if you want to be politically correct. This is what we're going to call this thing. And this is what we're going to do. And it's going to be of, by, and for the people. And the people are going to have the power. And anytime the people get together and form an institution, that institution will not have rights, it will only have privileges. Even if that institution is the government itself, it's answerable to the people. And corporate form answerable to the people. Any sort of institution must play by the rules that we, the people, decide. And now we are going off in just hell-bent for leather in this direction of theocracy, autocracy, oligarchy, This whole idea of you know the wealthy 400 families running the country. I remember when I was a kid and people would talk about the Bilderbergers or whatever, you know, the families of Europe who really control the world. And I thought these guys are conspiracy nuts. And now we have, but it's not a conspiracy. I mean, that part of it, I don't know about. You know, I still can't speak to that. But what I can tell you is that it's right out in the open. We just, as Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders told us in the first hour of this program, we just had the House of Representatives pass a law blowing away the estate tax because the Mars family lobbied for it and was passing out money left and right in Congress. Do we want to have a landed gentry in this country? And do we want to have a system of where we elect our representatives that is in the control of that landed gentry? That's under corporate control, not under the control of we the people? I don't. And I just have to think that you don't either. That you get it too, that this is wrong. And the only way that we're going to change this is if we, you and I, if we start getting active. Getting politically active, speaking out. You know, don't be afraid to speak out around the water cooler. Speaking to your elected representatives, get the word out. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Hartman. See you tomorrow. See you Monday. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.